Chapter 11. Small is Big. Parva sub ingenti, the small under the protection of the great. Prince Edward Island provincial motto, first appearing on the Great Seal of St. John's Island, 1769.
In our second century of Confederation, we must consider our position not in terms of our liabilities, but in the exercise of our assets and their potential. It is my feeling that proper development and management of our existing resources, combined with confidence in ourselves and our region, can produce a new era of success in the Maritimes. Alex Campbell to the Canadian Club of Cape Breton, Sydney, October 11th, 1972.
In mid-April of 1967, Alex Campbell appeared on Front Page Challenge, the long-running CBC quiz show featuring a panel of journalists questioning a mystery guest with the aim of identifying a story associated with the hidden newsmaker. The panel required barely half a minute to identify the headline, "Campbell Elected in PEI," after getting an early break with the standard question, "Are you a politician?" When Campbell sat down for a more in-depth interview, the famously crotchety Gordon Sinkler led off with, "Tell me why PEI should be a province." While caught off guard by the question and the gruff manner in which it was asked, Campbell offered a two-part response, that Prince Edward Island had been an independent colony and therefore entered Confederation as a province, and second, if size were the sole criterion, perhaps Ontario was too big. Sinkler continued to badger Campbell about PEI and the other maritime provinces being too small, before ceding to his more diplomatic co-panelists, Betty Kennedy, Pierre Burton, and guest Lister Sinclair. Several weeks later, Campbell spoke to the annual meeting of the Maritime Provinces Board of Trade, telling him that the head-to-head with Sinclair on reflection had been beneficial, saying, "It was several hours after the program that I realized the wisdom of the statement, 'The best speech is the one you make on the way home.'" He told the Board of Trade, "I have come to appreciate this man, Sinclair, and to consider him a friend of the Maritimes. This particular brand of criticism has sent most Maritimers searching for arguments and reasons and answers." Campbell went on to reflect, "Maritimers have been knocked down and counted out many times, but have always come back." He predicted that in the 20th century, our Confederation partners will rediscover that Eastern Canada lies to the east of the Quebec Bridge and that the Maritimers are coming on strong. While he said many times that he did not enter politics with a fixed ideological agenda, Alex Campbell's musings on Gordon Sinclair's gruff questions exposed his philosophical core. Campbell believed intuitively that small could be big. He believed that Prince Edward Island and the Maritimes could have a bright future, provided they were willing to change, to put up a good fight, and to work together. Intricately woven into this philosophical tapestry was a view that islanders and maritimers should start boosting their confidence through enhanced knowledge about themselves and about each other, and demonstrate respect for their heritage. This went beyond boosterism or parochialism. To Alex Campbell, enhanced local knowledge, culture, and heritage were integrally tied to convincing the world that small could be big. Moreover, if Prince Edward Island was going to move forward on the strengths of its heritage and its advantages of scale, it had to excel and to look for opportunities to get further ahead by cooperating with its neighbors.
Regional rationalism.
In his 1967 address to the Maritime Provinces Board of Trade, Campbell sketched a vision of what he called regional rationalism, starting with the observation that such complex concepts as these are very easily oversimplified and even more easily promoted, but they are awfully difficult to translate into specific forms of coordinated action. After dismissing political union as not the ultimate in cooperation between the present provinces, Campbell explained, "What is most urgently required now is economic integration within the region." He told the Board of Trade, "In the process of coming to grips with a substantial economic development program for the island, we have been forced to recognize the need for a much broader view of our environment than was perhaps formerly required." He called for greater interprovincial cooperation in the administrative field and the economic field. By way of example, Campbell cited motor vehicle licensing as an obvious case in point, where benefits could be achieved through economies of scale in program administration and through greater reliance on computerization. He pressed further, pointing to the forthcoming Medicare program as offering a unique opportunity for the region to combine its requirements. Campbell went on to suggest that there could be joint approaches to housing and highways, and that there was substantial potential for integration of educational systems. These were radical views, notably by comparison with the position of his predecessor, Walter Shaw, who had shrugged off New Brunswick Premier Louis Robichaud's impromptu comments regarding Atlantic Union at the 1964 First Minister's Conference in Charlottetown. Shaw had also declined to support a joint study subsequently proposed by New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. Campbell's views on the Atlantic economy were far-reaching, calling for regional rationalization in primary sectors and industrial development policy, saying, "It just doesn't make sense to conclude that industrial location patterns will or should reflect provincial boundary lines in the years to come." He suggested that a common approach to economic development would remove much of the competition which exists between provinces at the present time, and which leads to abnormally high costs, and on some occasions, to inducements which are perhaps not related to the economic environment. 10 years later, in September 1977, Campbell was still calling for regional economic rationalization, laying out the elements in substantial detail for the Atlantic Liberal Caucus meeting in Memram Cook, New Brunswick.
"Our goal as a region must be self-sufficiency. To achieve that goal, we must develop a regional perspective, a regional strategy, and a regional plan of action. The areas to which we must focus our attention as a region are the following. Attitudes. Our leaders, our politicians, our businessmen, our media must stop their negative thinking. They must stop blaming everyone and everything else for our problems and start identifying the positive actions we must take to restore our wealth and dignity. Energy. We must develop a comprehensive energy policy and development plan for the Atlantic provinces. Production. We must work together to develop a comprehensive formula for action that will enable us to once again become producers of our own food, clothing, and housing. We must also develop or secure complementary technology and production facilities that will allow us to produce and compete for export trade. Education. We must restructure our educational system in Atlantic Canada to produce the skills and technology needed to optimize the productivity of Atlantic Canada. Trade. We must search out markets and trade opportunities that we as Atlantic Canadians can best serve with Atlantic products. Fiscal. We must develop regional fiscal policies that will use tax and tariff levers to encourage production, export, and capital formation. Transportation. We must develop a regional transportation policy and action plan that will serve the developmental needs of this region. Power. We must come to a collective understanding of our real and potential power. Real and potential power. If we grow together, we can contribute. If we prosper together, we once again will be listened to in the corridors of power."
Notwithstanding the challenges and attitudes that Alex Campbell identified as standing in the way, the decade from 1967 to 1977 was a high watermark for regional cooperation. The general populace had an open mind on the subject, with 46% of island respondents telling Ben Crowe's researchers in April 1970 that they favored union, as compared with 34% who were not in favor and 20% who replied, "Don't know." Campbell signaled early on that he had more appetite than his predecessor Walter Shaw for working together with the other maritime provinces. During the deferred election campaign on June 29, 1966, Campbell spoke to the Atlantic Association of Radio and TV News Broadcasters, telling them that PEI should not be sitting out the talks that were already underway between New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. In March 1968, Prince Edward Island joined Nova Scotia and New Brunswick in establishing a maritime union study under the leadership of economist Dr. J.J. Deutsch of Queen's University. In late November 1970, after delays due to the October crisis in Quebec and provincial elections in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, both of which led to changes of government, The study was released in the Confederation Chamber in Charlottetown, with the three premiers present. The Deutsch Report advocated full political union of the three provinces, following creation of a Council of Maritime Premiers and the establishment of a Maritime Provinces Commission and Joint Legislative Assembly. The premiers were guarded in their reaction to the report, with Richard Hatfield being the most openly disposed to the concept and Gerald Regan the least so. Alex Campbell said that he was not prepared to commit himself to the concept of union until we've had a full consideration of all the factors. The Evening Patriot reported that Campbell repeated that he has an open mind on the subject, but makes it plain that his interest lies in the economic and people problems rather than the political aspects. Campbell would later say that he regretted that political union had figured so prominently in the name and mandate of Deutsche's Maritime Union study, as it drew attention away from the more subtle and pressing opportunities for regional cooperation. In January 1971, the premiers met in Halifax, at which time they agreed to establish the Council of Maritime Premiers. They reconvened for the Council's first meeting 4 months later in Fredericton. The Council served as a secretariat for meetings of the three premiers, as a coordinating body for regional policy positions on national issues, and as a shepherd for regional agencies and collaborative initiatives. While the Deutsch study's core recommendation for political union did not gain traction, there were numerous instances of path-breaking regional collaboration in the lead-up to the report and in its aftermath. In March 1968, the Atlantic Provinces Survey and Mapping Program was established, leading to the creation in 1973 of the Land Registration and Information Service, or LRIS as it was known. The LRIS had a mandate to implement a comprehensive program of surveying and mapping for the three maritime provinces, with headquarters in Fredericton and shared facilities and operations in various locations, including the Surveys and Mapping Division in Summerside. This meant new capacity in land records and management, as well as in property assessment and taxation. The LRIS was critical to Prince Edward Island's progress on land records and centralized property taxation. In 1974, the Maritime Provinces Higher Education Commission, or MPHEC, was established. As an arm's-length agency to make recommendations to governments with respect to financial requirements, program priorities, and policies in higher education, the MPHEC brought all maritime universities and selected other post-secondary institutions within its purview. Other instances of regional collaboration during this period included the Atlantic Police Academy at Holland College in Charlottetown and several other regional centers dedicated to specific professions, plus the Maritime Municipal Training and Development Board. At the ministerial and sectoral levels, there were numerous collaborative initiatives, notably in transportation, tourism, education and skills development, marketing and trade, energy and environment, and health and welfare. There were specific initiatives in areas as diverse as special education, drug dependency, tourism marketing, remote sensing, electricity distribution, and lotteries. In 1976, the Atlantic Lottery Corporation was created with head offices in Moncton. Many of these initiatives reflected a quid pro quo about where people and resources should be located and whose turn it was. It took almost a decade to reach a final decision to locate the Atlantic Veterinary College in Charlottetown, with Nova Scotia holding out in favor of Truro.
An expanded footprint for regional collaboration.
The footprint for intergovernmental collaboration was expanded in the summer of 1973, when Alex Campbell hosted the first meeting of the New England governors and Eastern Canadian premiers at the Brudenell Resort. The two-day conference brought together the governors of six New England states and the premiers of Quebec and the four Atlantic provinces to discuss issues of common concern. The main output of the 1973 meeting was a five-point accord on energy and communications, agreeing to exchange information relating to energy supplies and energy needs on a continuing basis, exchange information regarding environmental problems and the ways in which they may be minimized, urge the respective federal governments to permit the freest possible marketing and transportation of energy supplies between the regions, and establish a permanent advisory committee with representatives from each state and province as a vehicle to exchange information on energy supplies and needs. While the talks were mainly oriented toward Atlantic Canada becoming a larger player in supplying the energy needs of New England, Alex Campbell saw the regional approach potentially benefiting Prince Edward Island as an energy consumer. As he told a local newspaper, If a regional supply of energy is organized which carries low-cost electricity, we want to be hooked into that system. Among other concerns addressed, Campbell chose to focus on transportation, pointing to 11 different sets of regulations affecting trucking in the states and provinces concerned, and to the lack of air cargo service or scheduled container shipments to enable trade within the region. He was particularly concerned about getting Prince Edward Island food products to New England markets. The 1973 meeting became the first of more than four decades of annual conferences, normally taking place in August, that served as much to develop interpersonal networks and relationships and lobby higher levels of government as to take specific initiatives. In addition to energy, the conferences of premiers and governors have focused on trade, economic development, environment, oceans, forestry, agriculture, fisheries, transportation, information technology, and tourism.
Regional positions on national policy and strategy.
The greatest impact of the Council of Maritime Premiers in its early years came in developing joint policy positions on matters of national interest. Beyond the expected topics of transportation, taxation, and transfer payments, the Council developed common positions in new areas, such as municipal affairs. For the first joint national meeting of federal, provincial, and municipal governments in November 1972, the Council prepared a joint position paper that was reported by the Canadian press under the headline, "Maritimes Urge Steps to Slow Urbanization." The paper might have been entitled, "Small is Big." It pointed out the costs of concentrating Canada's population in massive urban centres and noted, "In the Maritimes, there would be particular interest in a national urban policy which would retain the viability of smaller towns and cities, whose community facilities could be seen as assets to promote and develop, rather than aging resources of steadily diminishing value." The paper recommended that any reordering of public spending priorities be made on a basis proportionate to size, and that national policy should factor in less urban regions with an emphasis on stimulating moderate growth in smaller but stable urban areas and establishing new towns. Alex Campbell's small as big views obviously underpinned the joint maritime position. It was more than a coincidence that Andy Wells served as Assistant Secretary to the Council of Maritime Premiers from August 1971 until the fall of 1972, at which point the joint regional position was developed. In a June 1973 address to a regional meeting of Rotary International in Summerside, Campbell called for greater effort in regional policy coordination, saying, "If we are unable to formulate our own policy initiatives in the economic and social fields, we may well have decisions in these areas made for us at the federal level, which, in turn, may well press us into the mold of Ontario." He pointed to a number of areas, including science-based industrial development, deepwater port development, and environmental use and control, that he saw as being too complex or too expensive for the resources of a single province, adding, "Even the broader issues and priorities and alternatives of social and economic policies are, on the basis of experience, often beyond the scope of a single province." Campbell reinforced his views by observing, "Perhaps the most obvious and certainly the worst manifestation of the limited provincial capability of policy formation is the persistent and pervasive dependence on the federal government for its policy input. Not only is this common within the more narrow confines of shared cost policy areas, but it also prevails over broader issues of social and economic policy." He concluded with a call for a firm commitment from governments of the region to provide some mechanism or focal point so that we may pool our inputs of an advisory nature to assist and direct our regional decision-making system, the Council of Maritime Premiers. Later in 1973, Campbell spoke to an October joint luncheon of the Atlantic Provinces Economic Council and the Charlottetown Rotary Club on the theme, "Decentralization, a Motherhood Concept?" He opened his address by acknowledging that APEC had devoted considerable energy to persuading the federal government to get their people out of the hothouse atmosphere of the capital city and into the regions where the help is needed. He confirmed that he had long been an advocate of policy decentralization and had called for the central government to put flexibility into national policies to the extent that this would permit meaningful development at the local level. He also conceded that he had complained about the seeming disinterest of our federal government in the problems of this region, exemplified by the remote, unfeeling bureaucrats running the Ottawa machine. At the same time as he acknowledged frustrations dealing with Ottawa and favored flexibility toward the regions, Campbell said he would like to raise a warning flag, cautioning, "We are in no position to lower our guard, to allow our concerns to dissipate, and to relax our vigil simply because a large number of federal civil servants are going to move into our region." Campbell asked whether the real decision-making ability would remain in Ottawa, such that the federal bureaucrats in the region might end up simply being another layer of bureaucracy which we must fight our way through before reaching the decision-makers. Campbell warned his combined APEC Rotary audience, if decentralization implies this sort of activity, we may end up with well-studied programs but little delivery. After more than 7 years of intimate dealings with Ottawa, including negotiating and implementing the Comprehensive Development Plan, Campbell knew how important it was to have access to the federal cabinet and to the prime minister, and to have good working and personal relations with senior bureaucrats. He concluded by telling his audience, "Rather than becoming preoccupied with the concept of decentralization, we must direct our concern to the quality of programming, whether centralized or decentralized. We must ensure that programs and policies are properly related to our regional needs and aspirations." While Campbell was happy to put up a good fight on behalf of the Maritimes and Atlantic Canada, he didn't mind having some fun, and his interactions with other premiers at regional and national meetings were often the closest equivalent there was to a vacation. The three Maritime premiers met in Charlottetown in February 1977. While his colleagues Gerald Regan and Richard Hatfield were attending a Stomp and Tom Connors performance across town, Campbell and some of his officials, along with Barry Toole of New Brunswick, teamed up with The Guardian to produce a mock edition of the newspaper with the banner headline, "Premier's OK Maritime Union." The main article reported, "In a secret meeting late last night, the three premiers put aside past differences and agreed to form a new province to be called Maritima, with its capital in Summerside. Campbell would become the first premier of Maritima, while Gerald Regan was to be Lieutenant Governor Designate and Richard Hatfield Minister of Intergovernmental Affairs." In a related story, the retiring Secretary of the Council of Maritime Premiers, Al Lomas, reportedly felt that political union was premature, saying, "I feel so strongly about this that I am already taking steps to form a new political party to oppose maritime union." The mock newspapers were delivered to the hotel rooms of Regan and Hatfield and their key officials early in the morning. At breakfast, they showed no sign that they had received or read the newspaper, which of course they had. Later in the day, the gathering shared a good laugh. Campbell was on good terms with his maritime counterparts throughout his years in office. He briefly overlapped with Robert Stanfield in Nova Scotia, followed by G.I. Ike Smith, and had sustained collaborations with Gerald Regan, as he had with Louis Robichaud and Richard Hatfield in New Brunswick. When he stepped down in 1978, Executive Director Emery Fanjoy of the Council of Maritime Premiers wrote to Campbell to say, "One of your many initiatives was the Council, and you have been one of its strongest supporters through the years."
Island heritage and identity.
As much as he was a proponent of regional collaboration, Alex Campbell was both determined and canny when it came to defending Prince Edward Island's separate status and needs as a province. To Campbell, there was no inconsistency between being staunchly pro-PEI and in favor of regional collaboration. Both positions sprang from the same source. The smallest partners in Confederation had a contribution to make. They deserved respect and an opportunity. Further, some things were better done in small places and in the regions. It was not good for Canada to be totally centralized. Integral to this view, Confederation required an element of equal opportunity among provinces and regions for the country as a whole to function best. As with his approach to regional collaboration, Campbell believed intuitively that things needed to change for Prince Edward Island, that leadership was required to raise expectations and standards, and that PEI had to become more competitive. The initial challenge was psychological, to buck up Islanders' confidence and ambition, along with their sense of identity. This was a delicate balancing act for the Premier, to encourage Islanders to be proud, to urge them to do better, and to get them to vote for him. In his September 1966 television address, reporting on his first 2 months in office, Campbell shared grim fiscal news at the same time as he called for new and comprehensive social and economic development of our resources. The necessary equilibrium, some might say a paradox, was struck with two sentences near the end of his address, when Campbell said, "We have already entered that phase of history where experience provides in part only our future course. We islanders are a proud people, proud of our history and traditions, and proud of our island province." Campbell recognized the value of island heritage as a lever to encourage Prince Edward Islanders to seek a better future, and as a central building block of identity. The 1967 centennial of Canada's Confederation provided numerous platforms to deploy heritage to its fullest, and Campbell did not miss an opportunity. At the dedication of a geodetic survey monument on the grounds of Province House in June 1967, as part of a network of similar monuments on legislative grounds across Canada, Campbell paid tribute to Captain Samuel Holland, who, he said, played a very major role in the history and development of our island. Campbell described in detail the working conditions of the small crew that did the main work of Holland's survey in the winter of 1765, and commented that the results of that work were deeply impressed on the cultural geography of the island to this day. A week later, at the opening of a lich gate erected as a centennial project at the entrance of the St. Eleanor's Cemetery that includes the gravestone of Honorable William Henry Pope, Campbell praised Pope as the strongest island proponent of Confederation, as a lawyer who twice revised and consolidated the laws of Prince Edward Island, and as a student of history. Campbell regularly cited examples of dedicated effort and innovation from PEI heritage or Canadian culture, and linked those examples to the need to continue changing and improving. At 1967 Dominion Day celebrations, Campbell said of Canada's first 100 years, "Having accomplished the primary task of accommodating ourselves to a vast and often inhospitable wilderness, we have long since turned our attention to positive action in the international community and to enriching our cultural life." He closed his remarks that day by quoting the opening lines from Sir Charles G.D. Roberts' 1880 poem, An Ode for the Canadian Confederacy, "Awake, my country, the hour is great with change," adding his own commentary, "And so it continues. We accept the challenge and invigoration of change and dedicate ourselves to the development of a greater Canada." Campbell's most stirring and comprehensive address of the 1967 centennial year was his "I Am a Canadian" speech on the occasion of Prince Edward Island Day at the Canadian National Exhibition in August. He told his audience, "For many years, islanders have read and heard much external comment about themselves and their island. We have been told that we were off the beaten path, that we lacked natural resources, that development efforts successful elsewhere could not succeed in Prince Edward Island, that our greatest export was people, that modern industry would not even give us a passing glance, and that our small size and population would not justify the cost and effort required to bring the province into the 20th century." Campbell sketched out the elements and objectives of PEI's envisaged development plan and said, "In pursuing this particular program and this approach, we feel that we are contending with a national problem, but on a small and more manageable scale. And in this question of scale, as I have said, lies our greatest advantage. Prince Edward Island is, in many respects, Canada in miniature." He proposed that PEI should be embraced as a laboratory for both the physical and social scientists, where national problems such as housing or pollution or water resources could be approached experimentally and inexpensively. Campbell's commitment to heritage included squaring up to historical failings, especially if that meant a search for solutions and opportunities for Prince Edward Island. Campbell spoke about the planning that was underway for economic development, making an appeal to private investors, potential visitors, and of course the federal government. He reminded his CNE audience that economic development involves a human and social element, and ended with a moving personal statement that went to the heart of who he was and what motivated him as an islander and as premier.
"Let me conclude with the statement that I am a Canadian who lives in Prince Edward Island. I consider my living there a matter of choice rather than of circumstances. Most of our island residents have, during their lifetime, faced a decision either to remain on the island or to move elsewhere. Those of us who have chosen to live in Prince Edward Island have done so believing that there is a bright future for our province and a role for us to play in its development. I have long respected the million-acre farm and its people. It has challenged me to cultivate and develop it. It has captured my wife from Belleville in the heart of Ontario. It claims our children for its future."
The 1967 centennial year presented many opportunities for Prince Edward Islanders to put their best foot forward through local heritage projects, the construction of sporting facilities, rural beautification, or participation in the Atlantic Canada Pavilion at Expo 67. A prime opportunity to put PEI on parade came with the 3-day visit of the Queen Mother in mid-July. Travelling on the Royal Yacht Britannia, Her Majesty was greeted by veterans, school children, Boy Scouts and Wolf Cubs, Girl Guides, dignitaries, and thousands of enthusiastic PEI citizens, including 1,500 guests at a garden reception at Government House. The Queen Mother formally opened the provincial administrative buildings, where she offered a broad, sincere smile to a mongrel dog that wandered through the plaza. She attended Anne of Green Gables the musical and the Summerside Lobster Carnival, and visited the Prince County Hospital and the Queen Charlotte Armouries. Alex Campbell joined the Queen Mother during most of her jam-packed schedule, recalling Her Majesty as the most delightful visitor of his 12 years as Premier.
Heritage Protection and Development.
Inspired by how well 1967 worked out, Campbell started as early as 1969, anticipating the 1973 centennial of Prince Edward Island's entry into Confederation. He wasn't bothered by the fact that this would be the third time in 9 years that Prince Edward Island celebrated a centennial related to Confederation, or by the detail that PEI had opted not to join Canada in 1867. A lot of good could come from a centennial, and especially from celebrating Prince Edward Island heritage. In the fall of 1969, Campbell asked Provincial Archivist Doug Boylan, a straight-shooting public servant who advised Campbell on constitutional matters and would later become Clerk of the Executive Council, for a frank assessment of the situation with PEI's historical and cultural resources. Boylan prepared a memo reporting that much work had been done by government agencies and private individuals, but that none of the efforts was in any way coordinated, and said that the visual evidence of this work is, in many cases, trashy. He noted that tourism development had initiated projects of a historical nature because this department has access to larger sums of money, and taking the example of the Tourist Bureau and Province House, Boylan described it as a disgrace. While ad hoc arrangements had been made through Executive Council from time to time to purchase items of historical value which otherwise would leave the province, Boylan said this demonstrated a lack of policy to collect material on other than a panic basis. Boylan reported that there was tremendous local interest, but went on to comment, "I have noted that Islanders have a great interest in their history, are constantly referring to it, and know little about it." This prompted Campbell to call together a citizens group to provide advice on the protection and development of PEI historical resources and the promotion of heritage awareness. The group was broadly representative of Prince Edward Island and high-powered when it came to island heritage. It included philanthropist and cultural maven Wanda Wyatt of Summerside, historian Father Francis Bulger of UPEI, Dr. John Maloney, who was president of the PEI Historical Society and an accomplished amateur archaeologist, and Charlottetown heritage activist Catherine Hennessy. Campbell chaired the group through 3 meetings, resulting in the recommendation to create the Prince Edward Island Heritage Foundation. The group made its recommendation with a sense of urgency, reporting a continuing loss of PEI historical items by sale, demolition, or carelessness, a lack of coordinated efforts among a number of groups and individuals attempting independently to preserve heritage, and a lack of accurate knowledge of the extent of historical resources. To a considerable degree, the situation with historical resources paralleled the land question. The group also reported that there was widespread interest in island history and heritage. The Prince Edward Island Heritage Foundation was created by legislation in 1970, and its inaugural board included Thane Campbell, who retired as PEI's Chief Justice when he turned 75 in July 1970, as chair of the foundation. It included Walter Shaw, who did not run in the 1970 election. Wanda Wyatt was named vice chair, and history professor Father Francis Bulger continued from the citizens group. Charlottetown's heritage activist trio of Catherine Hennessy, Ruth McKenzie, and Irene Rogers was offered 1 slot on the foundation board, which they resolved by drawing McKenzie's name from a hat. Hennessy would later become the first executive director of the foundation.
The place to be in 73.
In parallel with the creation of the Heritage Foundation, the 1970 legislative session adopted the 1973 Centennial Celebration Act. The legislation empowered the Prince Edward Island Centennial Commission to lead the planning and implementation of the 1973 centennial celebrations. With 21 active members and 25 honorary directors, the commission was designed to be inclusive on geographic, demographic, institutional, and subject matter grounds. Given its size, the primary work of the commission was carried out by an 8-person executive committee, consisting of 3 cabinet members, 3 lay members, 1 MLA, and a deputy minister. The commission and executive committee were initially chaired by Robert Skuurman, who was well suited for the task given his dual responsibilities as Minister of Community Services and of Tourism Development. Skuurman also brought to the task his genial nature and background in broadcasting, sports, and community organizing, as well as an affinity for heritage. The executive committee generally met in the cabinet room adjacent to the Premier's office. While Campbell did not take part in the meetings or send in instructions, the executive committee was aware that the Premier had an intimate interest in their work. One of the big debates was over what should be done with federal funding of $1.444 million, provided on a per capita basis for provinces celebrating their entry into Confederation, following precedents established for British Columbia and Manitoba in 1970. The Commission made a public call for centennial project proposals, triggering numerous submissions from across the island, many of which were for capital initiatives related to either sports or heritage. The Executive Committee was close to evenly divided over whether the funds should go to recreational facilities or to enhance PEI's heritage facilities and historical resources. The debate dragged out over a period of months, starting in the fall of 1971. Alex Campbell did not intervene directly in the debate. Behind the scenes, Executive Committee member Jack McAndrew says that it was understood that Campbell did not want the money frittered away. When the Executive Committee met in the Cabinet Room on March 6, 1972, Campbell joined them prior to regular business to say that he appreciated the multiplicity of worthwhile projects that had been submitted and to encourage the Executive Committee to select capital initiatives that were island-wide in nature. After Campbell departed, and following a debate that lasted more than 5 hours, the Executive Committee decided in favor of heritage projects. Fred Hindman and Jack McAndrew were asked to prepare a position paper to be presented to the larger Centennial Commission the following week. The Centennial Commission had a further debate that was resolved by several closely divided votes in favor of the heritage projects. McAndrew says, "This was one of my proudest hours of any contribution I made to PEI." Hindman believes that the balance was tipped as early as Thanksgiving Sunday of 1971, when he and Heritage Foundation Executive Director Catherine Hennessy were asked to come to Summerside to hash out the issues with Robert Skuurman. Hindman and Hennessy argued in favor of heritage, and Skuurman concluded by saying, "It will be done. I will support you." Hindman left the 1971 meeting with the impression that Skuurman must have had the blessing of the Premier. Campbell announced in the legislature on March 24, 1972, that the capital funding would go toward 6 heritage projects: a fisheries historic site at Basin Head, a shipbuilding site at Green Park, a recreated farming village at Orwell, the Townsend Woodlot near Surrey, a museum in the waterfront complex in Summerside, and the Beaconsfield site in Charlottetown, with the latter including the offices of the Heritage Foundation. Creative measures were taken to identify other sources of provincial and federal funding to support a total of 80 community capital projects, many of which were sports-related. The biggest provincial grants were for a bookmobile traveling library service and a $200,000 endowment fund for the Heritage Foundation. Not everyone was happy. On the day of Campbell's announcement, Charlottetown Mayor Dorothy Corrigan sent a telex to Secretary of State Gerard Peltier, voicing dissatisfaction with the allocation of funds and pointing out that the Capital Project Committee for Greater Charlottetown, which she chaired, represented 35% of the PEI population. The group had pushed hard for a major sports complex to include an Olympic-sized swimming pool to be located at UPEI. Notwithstanding the efforts that went into tipping the balance in favor of heritage, the funds provided were still only partial. As the Centennial Commission wound up its work in January 1974, Gordon Bennett, who became chair after Robert Skuurman's untimely death in January 1973, wrote a memo to Premier Campbell saying, "A great deal of money and much hard work and planning went into these projects as part of our centennial year effort. I'm afraid their future operation is being left up in the air, and this government, or some other, will have a mess on its hands in a year or two if more concrete and precise plans for their operation aren't formulated. Debates about the proper structure and allocation of responsibility for the administration of heritage resources continued, and in 1976 a team of four outside experts was commissioned to conduct a study. Their report found confusion and misunderstanding among departments of government, the Heritage Foundation, other institutions already engaged in the field, and what is perhaps more critical, among the general public. The group called for strong, decisive action to remedy what it characterized as fragmentation, duplication, and in some cases even neglect, which has been evident in terms of historical resource preservation and management on PEI. Alex Campbell received the report as Premier and as Minister of Cultural Affairs, a role he assumed in July 1976, following Earl Hickey's decision to leave political life. The team of experts recommended the creation of a provincial museum with operations in Summerside and Montague and a central unit at the Confederation Centre in Charlottetown, thereby returning to the gallery and museum mandate envisaged when the centre was first promoted in the 1960s. While little headway was made on the recommendation to create a provincial museum, the report brought to a head the question of the autonomy and reporting lines of the Heritage Foundation. On December 1, 1976, Premier Campbell resolved an active debate by siding with the Foundation's view that it should retain its own board of directors and budget without reporting to the Department of Tourism, and that the Foundation should play the lead role in the development of Prince Edward Island's historic resources. The newsletter of the Heritage Foundation cheered what it described as a red-letter day. The 1973 centennial was a banner year for Prince Edward Island heritage and identity. Provincial license plates carried the tagline, "The Place to Be in 73," which was so popular that it was repeated the following year as "The Place to Be in 74," and again in 1975. The centennial song, "In Love with an Island," was performed regularly at festivities, including during the July 1st program at Province House, which featured a nationally broadcast address by Queen Elizabeth II. The Queen and Prince Philip spent 3 days on Prince Edward Island and visited all three counties as the centerpiece of a four-province Canadian tour. Islanders lined the 40-mile route of a royal motorcade from Charlottetown to Summerside to open the centennial summer games. 17-year-old Colin McAdam shaved 9 seconds off his previous best time running 1,500 metres, which he credited to the honour of running for the Queen. McAdam added modestly that everyone else ran faster, too. The royal couple next headed to Mont Carmel to visit the recreated Village Acadien, where they applauded singer Angèle Arsenault with special enthusiasm. Later in the visit, Queen Elizabeth officially opened the Beaconsfield headquarters of the Prince Edward Island Heritage Foundation. By year-end, the Centennial Commission reported that there were 85 community capital projects throughout Prince Edward Island, and that there had been a diversity of sporting, cultural, artistic, historic, and military events throughout the year. The symbolic figure for the 1973 centennial, the Smiling Father of Confederation, was kept busy. Among the most enduring benefits of the 1973 centennial was the launch, on Premier Campbell's suggestion, of the annual province-wide PEI Women's Institute roadside cleanup in early May.
Beyond centennials.
The affirmation of Prince Edward Island's culture and heritage during the Campbell years went beyond centennial celebrations. In March 1968, the provincial legislature unanimously adopted a resolution, moved by Premier Campbell and seconded by opposition leader Walter Shaw, to make French an official language of the Legislative Assembly. The context and collective sentiment were captured well by the remarks of Elmer Blanchard, who reminded the Assembly that more than 16% of the PEI population was of Acadian lineage, and that the 1961 census indicated that 9,200 islanders spoke French. Blanchard paid tribute to the organizations that had kept the Acadian culture alive, and went on to reflect both the spirit and the concern of the time by saying, "The promotion of all cultures, be it Acadian, English, Scotch, Irish, Dutch, or any other group, is to be encouraged as enriching ingredients to our island cultural pattern. Debates about Canada's national unity were a strong motivating factor for Prince Edward Island to recognize its own diversity." Campbell's partiality toward heritage did not immunize him from controversies or differences of opinion. Some of the most spirited heritage criticism during the Campbell years was directed at certain tourist attractions that appeared in the late 1960s and early 1970s, mainly in the Cavendish area and on the highway from Borden to Charlottetown, with critics contending that Canada's prettiest province could become Bargain Basement Disneyland or a weak imitation of Coney Island. While government was not able to do much to regulate taste, Alex Campbell had an open door to cultural advocates such as visual artist Mark Gallant, who persuaded Campbell that the bait sheds being built at PEI Harbors under the development plan should conform to a more classical or heritage look rather than a box-like industrial design. The bait sheds would outlast the controversial tourist attractions. In 1977, a coalition of individuals and community organizations, including the Prince Edward Island Heritage Foundation, challenged a permit to construct a castle at Cavendish before the Land Use Commission. They were unsuccessful, causing Father Francis Bolger to describe the decision as unforgivable. When the Campbell government turned its attention to the need for a comprehensive renovation of Province House, there were no easy solutions. Studies showed that at least $2 million would have to be spent to restore the legislative building. Parks Canada had an interest in the property for national historical purposes as the site of the 1864 Charlottetown Conference. In some correspondence, Province House was termed the most historic building in Canada. Discussions between the federal and provincial governments started as early as 1971, but did not reach fruition until 1974, with an agreement that the federal government would take a long-term lease and be responsible for the major restoration, and that the Legislative Assembly could continue to use the facilities in perpetuity. The long-term lease arrangement reflected government's response to criticism, including from the Brothers and Sisters of Cornelius Howitt, that Prince Edward Island would be surrendering the ultimate symbol of provincial sovereignty if Province House had been permanently transferred to the federal government.
Heritage, sense of place, and a fresh outlook.
During Alex Campbell's years in office, Prince Edward Islanders developed a new level of appreciation for their heritage. Campbell offered Canadians, as well as Islanders, regular lessons in how the smallest partner in Confederation could make a contribution, notably by drawing on its advantages of scale. Catherine Hennessy, who served as the first executive director of the PEI Heritage Foundation, says, "You never had to worry about Alex's commitment to island heritage. He had it in his blood and in his bones." To underscore how badly a commitment to heritage was needed, Hennessy adds, "We were trying to make up for 100 years of nothing." When Campbell stepped down as Premier in 1978, Hennessy wrote to say, "I hope it is never forgotten that your interest and belief in the importance of our heritage led to the first giant step in preserving it. I thank you for being in the right place at the needed time." For Alex Campbell, there was no more perfect expression of his Prince Edward Island pride and sense of heritage than to sing the island hymn, written in 1908 with lyrics by Lucy Maud Montgomery and music by Lawrence W. Watson.
Fair island of the sea, we raise our song to thee, the bright and blessed. Loyally now we stand, as brothers hand in hand, and sing God save the land we love the best. Upon our princely isle, may kindness, fortune smile in coming years. Peace and prosperity in all her borders be, from every evil free and weakling fears.
Alex Campbell kicked off his 1972 cross-country speaking tour in Sydney, Nova Scotia, with an address about Prince Edward Island's upcoming centennial year. The entire tour was geared to promote the 1973 PEI celebrations and to reflect on the state of Confederation. Campbell told his Cape Breton audience, "Only now, in the past decade, are we coming to realize the importance of our past, to attach significant value to our customs, our legendary lore, and our relics. Only now are we beginning to honor our cultural heritage." He said that Canadians and Maritimers should know their history and remember that Atlantic Canada was once a leading region of economic growth and prosperity. Campbell said that the time had come to channel our conception of the Maritimes in terms of our progress, our assets, our human resources, and our opportunities. Campbell was an ardent proponent of island heritage and identity. He was equally committed to maritime collaboration and regional identity within Canada. While some might consider these twin commitments to be inconsistent, this was not a problem for Campbell. Heritage was a pathway to a smarter, prouder future, not about reliving the past. Provincial jurisdiction was a valuable political instrument, not a barrier to opportunity. To Campbell, it was all about progress, assets, human resources, and opportunities. If he could go back to the 18th century, when the island became a separate colony from Nova Scotia, Campbell might have chosen parva est magna, or small is big, rather than parva sub ingenti, the small under the protection of the great, as Prince Edward Island's motto.